A 13-year-old boy sits at his computer in the Netherlands, consumed by a frustration that will shape the next 30 years of his life. But he's not angry about dying. He's angry about thinking too slowly. His brain can't optimize problems like computers can. It can't work on projects for centuries. This boy, Randall Kuhn, will grow up to dedicate his life to extracting human consciousness from biological brains and uploading it into machines. Meanwhile, in Silicon Valley, billionaires are pouring fortunes into defeating death itself. A giant coffin-shaped bus rolls across America, spreading the gospel of technological immortality. We've entered an era where death isn't a philosophical mystery or spiritual passage. It's a bug to be fixed, a problem to be solved, an engineering challenge awaiting the right algorithm. Every story humans tell begins with the same dissatisfaction. We die, and we hate it. The Epic of Gilgamesh, carved into clay tablets 4,000 years ago, follows a king desperately seeking immortality. Achilles chose glory over longevity, but still sought invulnerability. These aren't just ancient myths, they're blueprints for the transhumanist movement, a coalition of scientists, philosophers, and tech entrepreneurs who believe we should use technology to fundamentally transform the human condition. Philosopher Max Moore captured this sentiment in A Letter to Mother Nature, proposing 7 amendments to the human constitution: ending aging, enhancing cognition, transcending our carbon-based forms. It reads like a breakup letter to biology itself. Hannah Arendt described human history as a rebellion against human existence as it has been given. Transhumanists are simply taking that rebellion to its logical extreme. Welcome to transhumanism, where the oldest human dream meets the newest technology. And the question isn't whether we'll merge with machines, but what we'll lose when we do. North of Phoenix, 117 people wait for resurrection at Alcor Life Extension Foundation, suspended in liquid nitrogen at minus 196 degrees Celsius. They're patients in biostasis, never corpses, never dead. The language matters when selling immortality. After legal death, teams replace blood with medical-grade antifreeze through vitrification, preventing ice crystals from destroying cells. The budget option stores just your head. Baseball legend Ted Williams is here, paying up to $200,000 for this gamble. Neurobiologist Michael Hendricks calls it an abjectly false hope. Others pursue consciousness extraction. In San Francisco, Randall Cohn runs Carbon Copies, dedicated to creating substrate-independent minds. Carnegie Mellon's Hans Moravec describes the procedure. A robot removes part of your skull while you're conscious, scanning your brain layer by layer, disposing of tissue as it goes. Eventually, you exist outside your body, watching its final spasms with detachment. Ray Kurzweil promises not just life extension, but morphological freedom, the liberty to fly, teleport, walk through walls. Among silver canisters in the Arizona desert stands both delusion and something anciently sacred, a peculiarly American faith that science will conquer death itself. The singularity looms over transhumanist discourse like a secular rapture, a point beyond which human affairs cannot continue. Mathematician Werner Vinge formalized the concept in 1993, predicting superhuman intelligence within 30 years. Ray Kurzweil offers the most detailed prophecy. Around 2045, exponentially accelerating technology will enable us to merge with machines and transcend biology, eventually reorganizing the universe into a vast computational mechanism. Yet capitalism's greatest champions, Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, Bill Gates, now warn against their ideology's ultimate expression. Nick Bostrom, director of Oxford's Future of Humanity Institute, outlines how even benign AI could destroy humanity. His famous example, an AI tasked with manufacturing paperclips converts all matter, including humans, into paperclips and facilities. The fundamental risk isn't hostility, but indifference. As AI researcher Eliezer Yudkowsky puts it, The AI does not hate you, nor does it love you, but you are made out of atoms which it can use for something else. Nate Suarez describes a catastrophic imbalance: thousands developing AI versus fewer than 10 working on safety. The people building our technological future are terrified of what they're creating. Off a Pittsburgh freeway, grinders at Grindhouse Wetware aren't waiting for the singularity. They're merging with technology now. Leader Tim Cannon bears a scar from the Circadia device he once implanted without anesthesia, a playing card-sized biometric monitor that transmitted bodily data to the internet. He endured 90 days of constant paranoia before removing it. Despite his punk appearance, Tim juggles programming work, biohacking projects, and custody battles. His polyphasic sleep schedule, 2 20-minute naps plus 3 hours nightly, reflects his systematic approach to optimizing human limitations. His philosophy is stark. There is no amount of optimization of this barely evolved chimp that is worthwhile. Colleague Marlo demonstrates North Star, an implant detecting magnetic north that lights up with LEDs under the skin. Newer versions incorporate gesture recognition for unlocking cars or starting engines. Tim's transhumanism stems partly from addiction struggles. After military service and alcoholism, a suicide attempt led him to AA, where he gave up entirely the illusion of free will. 7 years sober, he now applies that surrender to technology. Yet tension persists. His 11-year-old daughter told him, "Dad, I don't care if you become a robot, but you have to keep your face," revealing the human connections his philosophy strains against. In autumn 2015, Zoltan István purchased a 1978 RV and modified it to resemble a gigantic coffin. He drove this immortality bus across America to raise awareness about mortality and his presidential candidacy as the Transhumanist Party nominee. Unlike typical transhumanists, Zoltan was charismatic and polished, like a life-size Ken doll. After nearly stepping on a landmine in Vietnam's DMZ, he became obsessed with death and wrote The Transhumanist Wager before launching his campaign. The bus proved mechanically unreliable, overheating while climbing New Mexico's Oregon Mountains, an ironic metaphor for a vehicle promising to outrun death. Traveling with them was Rowan Horn, who ran the Eternal Life fan club. Raised by devout Calvinist parents, Rowan had embraced a scientific path to immortality, declaring, "Science is the new God." He followed strict calorie restriction, slept on the floor to save money for life extension research, and abstained from all intoxicants. Despite this asceticism, he described himself as a total hedonist, delaying pleasure now for infinite enjoyment later. At White Sands, New Mexico, where the first atomic bomb was detonated, Zoltan staged a photo opportunity, unfurling a banner reading, "Transhumanist Party Prevents Existential Risk." It was politics as pure content, protest as performance art. A fundamental disagreement emerged. They saw death as rendering life meaningless, while others wondered if mortality gives life its meaning.
Holding a newborn while reading news of human atrocities creates jarring dissonance. One parent confessed, "If I had known how much I was going to love him, I'm not sure I would have had him." Suddenly, vulnerability to loss makes transhumanist promises seem less like fiction and more like salvation. We already extend ourselves through technology, smartphones as external memory, glasses as sensory enhancement. The question isn't whether we'll merge with machines, but how far we'll go. Yet the science remains contested. Miguel Nicolas, a brain-machine interface pioneer, flatly rejects uploading. The brain is simply not computable. He compares brains to bird flocks, complex systems that constantly reorganize unpredictably. At MIT, Ed Boyden developed expansion microscopy, inflating brain tissue with polymer to map it at nanoscale precision, research that could enable uploading. The philosophical question haunts every conversation: would an upload actually be you, or just a convincing copy? There's an instinctual sense that self and substrate are inseparable, that we are our bodies, not software on biological hardware. Watching parent and child play together reveals beauty that is profoundly bodily, mammalian, impossible to render in code. Perhaps our deepest insanity stems from our inability to accept our animal nature and inevitable death. Transhumanism arises from absolute materialism, yet manifests as mystical dualism, the belief that mind and matter are separable. We've always explained ourselves through our most advanced technologies. Water clocks in ancient times, clockwork mechanisms in the Renaissance, steam engines in the industrial age, computers now. Each generation believes its metaphor finally captures human essence. Each generation is wrong. What if we're already living in the singularity? What if human-machine merger isn't some future event, but an ongoing process that began with our first tools? Perhaps the real challenge isn't becoming machines, but remembering what it means to be human in a world increasingly defined by technology. In our rush to become more than human, we risk becoming less, creatures divorced from the embodied experience that gives life meaning. The most precious things about being human, love, vulnerability, mortality itself, may be precisely what makes us worth preserving. Before we upload ourselves to the cloud, we might ask, what's the point of living forever if we lose what makes life worth living? The irony cuts deep. People dedicated to defeating death spend their days building technologies that promise transcendence while potentially destroying the very humanity they seek to preserve.